is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Welcome, everybody. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore right here on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. We've got a big show coming up for you. We are going to cover everything that's happening in the world of sports and everything happening outside of the world of sports. So stay tuned for that. You guys can start texting in as soon as you'd like. 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Would love input from you guys as we talk throughout the day about the events of the weekend. We'll talk about it with some of our guests. Coming up at the bottom of the hour for you hockey fans, Ron Francis, the GM of the yet-to-be-named Seattle NHL team, will join us. Maybe he'll give us a little hint as to what we could look forward to there. So we'll get an update from him at 3:30. 3:45, Ryan Divish will be with us, talk some baseball, the professor at 4 o'clock, and then Michael Bumpus will join us at 5 o'clock. And by the way, I believe Michael Bumpus is going to be in with us the rest of the week, right? Jim, you're on vacation starting tomorrow?
That's correct. Yeah, Tuesday through Friday.
Okay. So Bumpus will be with us sitting in for Jim starting tomorrow, but he'll join us at 5 o'clock today, and we'll go over everything. He's had some thoughts. Everybody's got thoughts. You know, the protests over the death of George Floyd, we saw it across the country. We saw it here in our own backyard, and it was overwhelming. It was overwhelming. I saw a lot of disturbing images. I saw a lot of things that make you just shake your head and just feel like this is surreal. This is real life. This is happening all around us, around the entire country right now. Nobody's immune. Nobody's, you know, cut off from this. It's everywhere. And you saw what was happening in Seattle, and it was just I don't know. I'm not sure. And Dave, starting with you, just your reaction is, I don't know how much you watched. There were points where I had to, I would turn the channel. You know, it just became so overwhelming at certain points. And then I would tune back in, and then I would turn away and tune back in. It's heavy beyond belief.
It really is. And, I just want to, I hope our listeners and our texters just know we're all of our hearts are in the right place. And, the other thing is you can hold two different thoughts in your head at the same time. And, part of it was, watching what was supposed to be a peaceful protest taken over by rioters. And then, of course, just watching the George Floyd video, just screaming at my computer. It's heartbreaking.
Something,
things have to change. Yes. And so, we're all very sad about it. We're going to hear from a lot of different people today and just try not to overreact, but we're just trying to get through this thing, and it makes it even more complicated because everybody's stuck in their homes, and just a really difficult weekend to deal with that. I ended up turning on the TV Saturday morning, and I was watching the stupid cornhole competition, and I wasn't really anticipating what was going to happen later on. But I actually have a family member that went down in a peaceful manner to protest alongside the Black Lives Matter people, and all the other people came in and just kind of took it over. And she ended up getting out of there, when the curfew was put into effect, but just went down. And a lot of people did. They went down for all the right reasons, and rightfully so. And then it got taken over by a lot of violence. So it was just a shame to watch the whole thing. But, I can't help but go back to that video. And it's just one of the most frustrating, horrible, evil things I've ever seen. So, it doesn't justify any kind of violence or anything like that, but it does make you think, man, we've got to get this figured out.
Well, yeah, you try. I was just driving today, taking my truck in. I've had a few difficulties with it, and I listened to Ray Roberts with Danny and Gallant, and boy, his words. And Ray, just so heartfelt and so well-spoken and such a great message that he had. And speaking to the history, and I know we're going to get to Ray, and I think we're going to play everything that he said this morning with Danny and Paul. But, yeah, it just really hits home when you hear it from Ray Roberts and his struggles himself, going back to his grandfather, his father, his concerns for his own son. And it puts things in a perspective that, you know, I'm just, you know, this old white guy who grew up in Redmond, and it was mostly a white community at the time. I've never really experienced, and it's just saddens you, and it's heartbreaking, like you're saying, Dave. And, you know, there are things that you sit there and you try and understand when you're watching the protests and you're seeing the rioting and you're seeing people break into the Cheesecake Factory, and then you see the protests in Bellevue and the looting going on there. And then I even heard that maybe at the Renton Landing last night that there were some disturbances, and you sit there and you think, well, okay, why is there looting? Why is this going on? Why can't it be peaceful? And yet I read Gabe Marx's story, CougFan.com, the former Cougar receiver. And I just thought that it put things in perspective that I had a better chance of understanding. It's the frustration. They're tired of trying to get the white community to understand our struggles. And sometimes you need to do things that really get the white community's attention. And looking forward to talking to Michael Bumpus at 5 o'clock too, to get his perspective of what it was like growing up in LA and some of the things that he's dealt with. And yeah, it just comes back. I mean, so many different things going through my mind. I circled the OJ Simpson verdict, and you know, at the time I remember thinking, man, how can all these black people be celebrating OJ Simpson getting off this murder charge when it's clear to most of us that OJ Simpson committed murder? And then today I was thinking about it, and I thought, well, it's probably because there have been so many black people who have been wrongfully convicted over the years. And so it was maybe an understandable reaction. So, just a bunch of things. I'm probably not making a whole lot of sense here, but a lot of rambling thoughts on a day like today.
Well, and that's what everybody's trying to figure out, is the right way to approach it and you know, how to listen. How to listen. I mean, we don't have the answers, and I'm sure some people out there feel like they do. And if you feel like you got them, feel free to text them in. But there's not an answer to this point, and I think it's important that everybody listens. And with that, I want to play what Ray had to say today in case you didn't hear it on the morning show with Danny and Gallant, and I think Tom, Jake, and Stacy played it as well. But our buddy Big Ray Roberts, who's part of the Seahawks broadcast, does a great job on that, and he's a frequent guest of all the shows on this station. Had a really, really well thought out, well written statement about this entire thing. Cut number one.
I first want to say that thank you to those that are down for the cause and willing to sacrifice more than their words to create change. I am not a fan of the looting and robbing and stealing and violence. However, I am unapologetic as it relates to the intensity of the peaceful protesters and the discomfort it may produce for those sitting on their hands and finding every excuse imaginable and choosing to be distracted from the underlying issues. This is my truth. Agree, disagree, or agree to disagree. I really do not care. My truth does not represent the truth of all African Americans, but it was influenced by similar and often the same life experiences we all share. I have a lot on my mind, and most of it is fueled by anger, frustration, disappointment, and sadness. So what I'm going to say is what's on my mind at the moment. I would like to take this time to paint a picture that I hope will replace the images of the last few days and lead to a level of understanding, sympathy, and empathy, and actionable, measurable change. I do not have all the answers, and this is not intended to help you figure out what to do. That's your work. In 1619, the first Africans were kidnapped and brought to this country. They landed on the shores of Virginia, a place called Point Comfort, of all places, and were auctioned off and sold into slavery. From that moment, the blood that ran through the veins of this country did not run for us. The heartbeat of this country did not beat for us. We were never intended to share in its success or live freely within its borders. Think about that. Then consider this. Enoch Waters, who graduated from Hampton University in 1933 and worked for the Chicago Defender, the nation's largest black daily newspaper, and became the editor of the Associated Negro Press, wrote a piece entitled The Only American. It reads, "The black man is the only American who came here not seeking freedom because he had been robbed of it, not looking for a home because he had been snatched from his, not as a fugitive from persecution because it awaited him, not in search of opportunity because it was beyond his reach, not in pursuit of happiness because he had left it behind, not hoping for love because there was none for him, and not willingly because he came as a slave in chains." Think about that. Paint that picture in your mind and sit with it. Also sit with this. There were multiple generations of black people born in this country that never experienced freedom. I'll say it again. There were multiple generations of black people born in this country that never experienced freedom. Fast forward to the life and times of my grandfather, Warren Henry Roberts. He served and fought for this country. He fought for freedoms and rights that he did not have access to in this country. When he returned home, he was still called. He could not eat in the same restaurants or drink from the same water fountains as his fellow white soldiers. He could not sit in the same classrooms or live in the same neighborhoods. The back door was still the expected entrance to most establishments. He did not have the same access to health care, education, jobs, or housing that the white soldiers had. He could be beaten and even murdered for just looking at a white woman. And many of the perpetrators of these actions were white dudes he fought alongside of. So when I think about Kaepernick kneeling and all the shouts of he's disrespecting the flag, the military in this country, my blood boils. Our sacrifice for this country is unmatched, and it's not even close. Now, fast forward to the life and times of my father, Richard Ray Roberts Sr., and my uncles. And in this moment, I don't want to forget all the black women who suffer the most when black men are snatched for their lives and they're not fathers and they're not providers and they're not husbands and they're not someone to love on. They were denied opportunities, tormented, and had to face and endure blatant racism and hate, and had to bite, scratch, and claw for limited resources, essential jobs. It saddens me to know that my dad's best self was diminished and limited because of systems, mindsets, and people who do not value him as a man or as a human. Then I think of my life, the things I've seen. As a kid, I witnessed Klan marches in my town. The summer before ninth grade, while on a bike ride with my cousin, I was chased by a group of white dudes. I crashed and broke my wrist. I missed the beginning of the football season because of it. And I cannot count the number of times I've been called. My mother was told by my elementary school principal that I should attend a college that focused on football because I would never graduate from the University of Virginia. To feel like I wasn't even completely welcomed at the University of Virginia. Even as a player in the NFL, while a member of the Detroit Lions, I was pulled over and asked to explain how I could afford such a nice car or what work did I do to afford it. I was also stopped driving through my own neighborhood and asked why was I there. I was stopped in Redmond, Washington, just a little ways from my home, and asked if I was lost. Then I think of more recent things, like athletes been told to stick to sports, or players been called sons of by the president, to African-American men being murdered by those who are sworn to protect. When it comes to people of color and protests or pushback in this country, it more times than not is met with force and aggression, while whites toting guns, assault rifles, and who knows what else are free to move about and within a state capitol building, screaming in the faces of law enforcement and taunting them. Then I think to white mass shooters being apprehended alive and even taken to Burger King or even given water to be made comfortable. And I see black men Sorry. I see black men dying while selling cigarettes and CDs, while being stopped for a traffic violation, been killed while in cuffs, and like Mr. Floyd, begging to breathe and shouting out for the comfort and safety of his already deceased mother. I can't help but have images of slaves being beaten and hung to death, begging and shouting out for the comfort and safety of their motherland. I could go on and on. I believe and feel that what we are seeing and witnessing in this moment is an uncovering or exposing of a wound that was never meant to be tended to nor healed. We were expected to lay down, obey, fall in line, or bleed out. And honestly, guys, there is financial gain for some to keep it that way. CNN, Fox, other sports outlets, other media outlets and platforms all feed the beast. They lack cultural and racial representation, cultural awareness and competence, and engage in divisive language, opinions, and programming because it drives listenership, and that fills bank accounts. It's like a competition or a sport in and of itself. Who can be the most outrageous, the most controversial, the most divisive? It has become a game to gain the most listeners so that they can pat themselves on the back, feel good about their ratings, and put money in their pockets. And although I appreciate the opportunity to speak freely on this station, Bonneville is just as guilty. So to close, this is bigger than George Floyd or Trayvon Martin or Ferguson or Martin Luther King Jr. or Malcolm X. This is about a historical mindset and system that was never, never intended to benefit us, and we were never expected to defeat it or overcome it. And to those of you who are participating in the riots, know that there are those who see this as an opportunity to destroy, rob, and steal. Know that there are those covertly involved to instigate so that the peaceful protesters can take the blame. Know that destruction and violence is how the other side expects and wants you to respond so that they can use these actions to distract themselves from the real issues and use as an excuse not to hear us. Know that if they can't hear us, they cannot be challenged to defeat their own biases, isms, flawed mindsets, perspectives, and actions. And if they can't do that, they can't have their hearts changed. And if they can't do that, then policies and laws do not change. And if that happens, the future is bleak, and we continue to lose, and injustice continues to prevail. And to those on the other side, you know the game that's being played. You know what the issues are, and you're choosing to be distracted. By doing so, you protect your level of comfort, and your comfort will be the reason our country will never be its best self. Choose to engage the discomfort of putting in the work. Challenge and defeat yourselves. It is an individual and personal journey. Then use your privilege, access, resources, influence, knowledge, and power to help make a difference and deliver change. And so with that, I'd just like to say, thank you guys for giving me the space to say that. Really hard to get through. And
Ray,
I needed to do it so that I could so that I could communicate what I'm feeling.
Ray, thank you for sharing your perspective.
It's very powerful.
I value you. I value you, and I hear you. And you're a very important friend to me.
This is really hard, Danny. It really is, bro.
Yeah.
Like, with all the success I've had, and I don't read that for people to feel sorry for me or to be a victim or anything, because I still, at night, worry about my son getting home. And that was before, even before this. I still worry that my son gets home safely, that he doesn't get pulled over. My son is 6'8" and 300 pounds. And he drives a big car with big wheels and tinted windows and loud music. And he lives in Woodinville. So it would be really easy for a movement of his to be misunderstood and him not make it. So that's the type of stuff that people live with daily.
Yeah.
Not just in these moments, but it's daily. Mm-hmm. Every day people live like this. It's a burden that they carry. It's a fear. It's an anxiety. Even thinking about social distancing and wearing masks, I have to think about every single time I go in the grocery store, I put a mask on, and I make sure that I'm friendly and I speak to every single person I come by, because I don't want anybody to misinterpret my body language or anything as something other than just trying to find food. The other side doesn't deal with that, Daddy.
No,
we don't.
I love you, Ray. And
thank you, man.
I hope you find some comfort and know that I hear what you're saying. And I really appreciate you coming on and being vulnerable.
As do I.
And talking the way you did. It's important. It's important for us to hear.
Thanks for having me, man.
There you go. Ray Roberts on with Danny and Gallant this morning. And how do you say it any better? Wow. As much as everything he wrote and prepared was powerful and just spot on and educational and everything, it's the end when he started talking about his son and his concerns for him and how he approaches being in a store with a mask on. Those are the things that, as much as you try to listen and empathize, and you can't experience that. I mean, you don't know what that's like. And to hear him explain it is heartbreaking and wow, just really, really kudos to Ray Roberts. I mean, what else can I say?
Yeah, Big Ray I've known since 92 when he was our first round draft choice, and he just is a super passionate guy. He really is. And sometimes that gets misinterpreted for Ray and I'm talking about, you know, having sports arguments and stuff like that. But he just has so much passion. And I've had some tough conversations with him. And one time we got, you know, into it. And after a while, he goes, "Hey, dude, these are just issues. This isn't going to affect our friendship." And, you know, and just the way he said that and did that, I knew that he was going to be a friend of mine for forever. But the two things that really stood out to me, number one was his grandfather fighting and sacrificing his life for freedoms that he was not fully going to get. And he knew that. I mean, wow. I mean, you go in and fight a war knowing that there's really something on the line when there was a lot less on the line for his grandfather. And then, like you, Bob, the other thing, you know, I worry about my kids. I worry about my wife constantly. And to have to worry about that in that perspective is just, as he said, it's a burden that he has to carry. And I just, you know, I can... Ray is just such a passionate guy, and that was really well said. And like Danny said, and I talked to Danny earlier today, you know, I think the one thing he wanted to, and I'm like, "Danny, how did you handle this?" I mean, because we're a bunch of white guys sitting around talking about this, and the thing Danny said was, you know, do us white guys just sit here and talk about it, or do we call all of the people that we know that are black to come on the show? And, you know, it's just kind of it's a tough situation. But, you know, the way Danny put that is that he said, "Hey, I'm listening. And I think a lot of us haven't, you know, really heard a story like that and really listened and try to empathize, which doesn't mean sympathize. It means try to put yourself in their shoes, you know, another person's shoes and what that would be like. And the thing that kills me is that the thing that bothers me the most is when something is unjust. And it's a kind of a simplistic way to say it, but watching the cop with the guy pleading, "Please, I can't breathe," is just, it's so outrageous to me. And so I understand
the look on his face,
the anger,
that whole thing.
Yeah, it's so messed up. So anyway, I guess I thought Danny put that really well, and that's what I would say. I'm listening, man.
Yeah, I am too, Dave, and Bob, I know you are too. And I got to admit, there are times when I'm naive, because I feel like since I was a kid and now I'm 62 years old, that in that time frame, that things have gotten better with racial injustice and the police brutality. But I'm wrong about that. I'm definitely willing to admit that I'm wrong about that. And the George Floyd case, I mean, just one of several cases that we've seen. And just, you know, what really hit home to me was hearing how this is something that a black person deals with on a daily basis. And Ray really drove that home, talking about every single day. Can you imagine living like that? Gabe Marks, I mentioned him earlier, too, in his CougFan.com column, the former Cougar receiver, writing about the same thing. The black community deals with this kind of brutality every day. And it's the frustration that institutions aren't changing and the white community is not as outraged as we are. So all of those different things, it's I hate to say it, but, you know, it's been eye-opening for me, and I hope it has been for a lot of other people, too.
Yeah. Our thanks to Ray Roberts again. Just fantastic words and incredibly powerful and moving, and hopefully everybody took it as he intended, just to listen. And hear about experience from a perspective you can't relate to unless you've walked in those shoes. So you guys are free to text in throughout the show, 710-710 to the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line. Take two. We may do that later on in the show. Our thanks to Infinity of Tacoma at Fife, who sponsors that segment. We may have time later, but we got to talk some hockey. The GM of the yet-to-be-named hockey franchise here in Seattle, Ron Francis, will join us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up in less than 15 minutes, Ryan Divish from the Seattle Times will join us here with Bob, Dave, and more. But joining us now, he is the GM of the Seattle... Fill in the blank here, Ron Francis. Go ahead. Make it big. The GM of the Seattle.
Nobody wants that name out there more than I do, so I don't have to answer that question anymore.
I think we're all different. I want the Metropolitans. I know Jim wants Kraken. Dave, what would you like?
I like the Metropolitans. That's kind of cool, but I wouldn't mind the Kraken either. That's the big monster from that what's that movie from the 80s with Harry Hamlin? The Kraken.
The Clash of the Titans.
Kraken. There you go.
It's in the Pirates of the Caribbean, wasn't it, or something, I think? Yeah.
Yeah, it was in all of them. Yeah. So for people that didn't get it, Ron Francis is the GM of the Seattle NHL franchise. He is our guest. Ron, we appreciate you being with us. I would imagine you get asked that more than anything about what's going on with this team is, when are you going to unveil the team name? And this feels like a prime opportunity because there are very, very little in the way of sports happening right now, little drips and drabs here and there. But for the most part, you've got a captive audience that you could really, really capture and let everybody debate whether that was a great name choice or a terrible name choice. When do you think we might hear the name of this team?
Yeah, you know, it's really hard to project when that's going to happen. I think it's certainly important to make sure that you cross all the T's and dot all the I's. And, you know, we've got people working really hard to sort of get everything completed. But at the same time, we obviously want to be sensitive to kind of what's happening in the world, COVID and everything else. And so I think as an organization, we're working hard to try and get to that point, but we're also, you know, want to listen to what the mayor and the governor and everybody in the area is saying as well, and do things right, because there's obviously a lot of people suffering through this pandemic, and we want to make sure that we're sensitive to that as well.
Hey, Ron, I would say you're probably tired of being asked about the name, but hey, 2 years from now, you're probably going to be, you know, getting all these questions about why'd you get this guy and why don't you get this guy in here? So at least, you know, we're giving you a little break from that, right?
Yeah, no, I'm sure the questions look a little tougher as we move along other than the name.
How do you approach, I mean, what a huge task, like, you know, not like specifically, but like when you approach, okay, you're the GM building this team and everything, what are some of the things that you're kind of going through in order to get all of this thing launched and on time? What kind of tasks is it, you know, talent evaluation, obviously name, color, all that stuff, but what are some of the things that you've been working on?
Yeah, so I mean, there's actually so many things you probably don't even really think about when you take the job as a GM of an existing team. But in our case, we got a brand new rink that we're trying to build downtown. So you're having discussions there on everything from the design of the locker room to, you know, where do you want rubber? Where do you want carpet? Where do you want tile? How high do you want the tile? Where do you want windows? You know, where do you want the electrical outlets in regards to the medical training tables? So a lot of things going on there. Same questions at the practice facility in Palm Springs. You touched on the name and logo and colors, all that stuff. I mean, we're having conversations already on scheduling as we look forward for the arena and how we sort of build that out. You know, on the hockey front, we started with building our analytics department and working on creating some tools there that we think will be happy for, or helpful for us. And then, you know, we hired some pro scouts and had a handful of other people doing some scouting for us this year as well to start building our database. You know, you don't think of it, but we don't have any scouting systems. We have to sort of build that from the ground up and start collecting our own data where other teams have data for years and years. You know, in essence, we're starting from scratch. So a lot of things on the go. And then on top of that, we threw a pandemic right in the middle of it. So, you know, we're trying to sort that all out as well as we move forward.
Hey, Ron, how about an update on how the arena is going and the practice facility there at Northgate?
Yeah, the arena, you know, it's been great. We get updates. We have multiple meetings a week with our staff since everybody's working remotely. And Ken Johnson, our lead over there, has been doing a nice job of showing us pictures. And it's great to see concrete being poured and steel being raised in the arena. So it's progressing well. You know, I just think when this thing is done, it's going to be one of the most spectacular sports and entertainment facilities in the world. I mean, what they're doing with that roof is absolutely incredible in the engineering front. And then, you know, Lance Lopez is kind of leading the charge at Northgate, and that's progressing as well. So that's going to be a great facility. You know, it would have been easy for us just to do one rink for us, but we decided to do three sheets of ice, and with everything else our ownership has done, it's to give back to the community. So we're excited about that project, and as we talk, things look like they're progressing and on time. So, touch wood, we keep going in that direction.
Do you get a sense of the excitement? I mean, we get it because people text into the show, and you know, if there's any news at all around the team, the franchise, the team name, anything, we start getting texts from people, and how come you're not talking about this team? I'm like, well, because there are no players to talk about. There are no games to talk about. There's not a lot for us to really, you know, bring to the air and say, hey, what do you think of this? But it just shows you how excited people are, that they want to hear a discussion on any level, even though there's not a lot right now to cling to. Do you get that same vibe?
Yeah, no, I do. I mean, you kind of always knew that Seattle was a great sports town. You look at the fans, you know, with the Seahawks games and the past, the Mariner games, and the soccer last year with the Sounders was just incredible. You know, almost 70,000 people for the championship game. And, you know, when you hear the story about how our ticket sales went and the 10,000 deposits were done in 12 minutes, you realize that there's a lot of passionate hockey fans there. And then you start reading that there was, over 1,200 names, I think, submitted you know, people care about it. I talk to different reporters, and it's amazing. They say, hey, can we do an article? Can we do a piece like my story on Seattle? And you guys don't have a team. You don't have a name as, like, the number one red article or the number two red article in the last year. So can we talk about it? So I think from our standpoint as an organization, we are extremely, extremely appreciative of the fans and their interest and their passion and the fact we haven't even played a game yet. We're going to do everything we possibly can to give them a team they're proud of. And as an organization, do everything we possibly can to make sure that they're treated well and they like being part of our family.
Hey, Ron, you talked about building your scouting staff. And, you know, in the NFL, it's usually 10, 12 guys. They do areas of the country. Not a lot of them ex-players. What's sort of the makeup of the scouting system in the NHL?
There's probably a mix of, some former NHL guys and then other people that, you know, maybe weren't players at the NHL level, but maybe played at some different level. historically, most pro scouting staffs are very small, you know, more in the range of maybe three or four individuals. We went with six different people, plus Ricky Olczyk, my assistant GM, and myself. So we had eight of us on the pro game this year, as well as probably three other individuals doing some work for us, either at the NHL level or the AHL level, so covering the pro game. And then we probably had about another seven or eight on the amateur side, just sort of collecting data, even though we're not in this year's draft, but trying to get some data and information on the 17-year-olds as we look forward to our first draft in the summer of 2021. And, you know, now with the whole COVID situation, that may become critical. I mean, if God forbid, there's a second wave of this in the fall, and the CHL teams aren't allowed to play because their business model is based on having people in the building, then at least we have some information and data that we can rely on moving forward.
Hey, last thing for you, Ron. If you had to choose one or the other, do you think you're closer on a name or the team colors?
Well, they're one and the same, aren't they?
I don't know.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, I think they're all part of that same decision, right? Once we get a name, once we get colors, I think your next step then is to design a jersey that you're comfortable with. I hear you, and all I can say is our people are working really hard at this, and hopefully we can get this out there. Because I'm like you, I'd like to stop answering that question and start talking about other things, and I can't wait to start talking about the power play and penalty killing and different things like that as we move down the road a bit.
Ron, we appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. The Metropolitans, Ron, the Metropolitans. But hey, in all honesty, all sincerity, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes with us. Stay safe out there. Hopefully everybody around you is safe and healthy as well. And you've got a rabid fan base anxiously awaiting. They are sitting on the edge of their seat waiting for a team name, waiting for colors so the debate can begin. And you've got them, you've got a captured audience there. So hopefully it happens soon and we get a chance to talk to you once that is announced.
I would look forward to that. I appreciate taking the time to talk to me, guys. Thanks.
There you go. Ron Francis, the GM of the Seattle. Fill it in for yourself there, I guess, for now.
Cracking.
He didn't fall for it. He didn't go for it. But we'll see. Hopefully they'll take advantage of everything else being shut down for the most part. They could have all eyes on their product right now. Coming up, we'll talk with our buddy from the Seattle Times, talking some baseball with Ryan Divish. He's joining us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
We'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton, at the top of the hour with Bob, Dave, and Moore. But right now, we get a chance to talk to our buddy from the Seattle Times. Does a great job covering the Mariners and Seahawks here and there as well. Our buddy Ryan Divish is here. Ryan, how are you, man?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. I know we're supposed to talk baseball with you, and I definitely want to get your take on the latest proposal exchange between the players and the union. But you wrote a really, really good piece talking about your own experiences as a kid growing up who's a minority and kind of what you went through. And for those that didn't get a chance to read it, maybe if you could just sort of explain what you wrote and what prompted it. Was it just what happened this weekend? What was it that got you to the point of saying, you know what, I want to share this with people?
You know, we actually wrote it about 2 weeks ago. We've been kind of waiting for the right time to run it, you know, and the illustrations that ran in the paper with the story, they were finishing those up. So basically what we did is, you know, we came up with this idea of what sports means to us, and they wanted us to write about it. And I think for me, it's, you know, I overshared a little bit, but I was writing about it and just kind of about what they meant to me. And for me, personally, it was more about just kind of understanding who I am. And, you know, growing up in Montana in a town of about, you know, 6,000-7,000 people, as a half Japanese kid, it's a little different, you know, like you know, you're different. And, at that age, you know, kids aren't afraid to point out that you're different. So for me, like, I just kind of wanted to fit in and be normal, and sports kind of offered that angle for me, like just to be normal, to feel normal. Like, you know, I was able to kind of, just whenever I played sports, I felt normal. Like, I didn't feel like I was different than anybody else. And that was important for me. And so I just kind of wrote about that And even like as I got older, you know, I pretty uncomfortable around people in general, but like the language of sports or being in that kind of environment calms me down. And if you think about it, like when I moved out there in 2006, all my friends that I met out there that are not in the business, the media business, have all been through playing fast pitch softball or playing pickup hoops. And these are friends that I'll keep to life, you know, very close friends that, you know, I might not have otherwise met had I not played sports or used that avenue to kind of open myself up to who I am. Because I think a lot of times, you know, I would avoid situations like that otherwise.
All right. Well, Divish, cool article. Let's get back to business with baseball. What do you think the shorter season in which the players would be paid a full prorated share?
I mean, a full prorated share of like a third of a season. I'm not surprised. I knew the 114 games that the players submitted is too many. I think it, like, I still don't understand why 80 isn't just the perfect number. Until I see the books, I will refuse to believe that the owners are crying poverty in this, that they're losing money. Until I see real proof, not kind of like some of the stuff that they're willing to leak out through sources. If I see real proof, then I'll believe them. But until then, again, like we talked about last week, the Royals sold for $1.1 billion. I mean, if the Royals are worth $1.1 billion, what do you think the Mariners are since they own the controlling share of Root Sports? Or the Yankees of Yes Network and all these things. I think part of the problem in all of this, too, is you've got a group of owners that are less financially sound or less willing to spend the money than other owners. You know, I mean, like payroll, they're claiming payroll and all this stuff. I mean, like for the Mariners, they're going to be paying $30 million for guys that aren't even on their team. They don't have that much in salary. So every day it manages to make themselves look worse. And every day the country around it goes to hell a little bit more with all the things going on. And, you know, both sides look terrible in all this. And even if they do get it figured out, I don't know that it's going to get any better down the road.
Well, the players came back with a 114-game proposal and then the owner's counterproposal of 50 games. What do you think of the latest one?
It's like me trying to ask Anna Kendrick for a date right now. Neither side really thinks it's going to happen. I mean, honestly, this is so stupid. You know, like, the point of this isn't to win the negotiations, and that's what they need to realize. You're not trying to win it. You're trying to solve it. And by lowballing it or going to extremes, then it just doesn't work. What they should do is ask for a 10% reduction of the prorated fee, play the 82 games or even play 90 games, but a 10% reduction of the prorated fee and then the ability to defer money over the next 2.5 to 3 seasons and do it that way. And I think that's the most logical way they can do it. You know, if they want to divide up how they want to share the playoff money or the playoff revenues, then do that. I'm so sick of listening to these guys trying to take the extreme angle in all of this. One side crying poverty. And as I pointed out to many people on Twitter, you know, players' careers end. Owners are still billionaires and still own the team when a player's career is over with. And we're talking about 60% of these guys make $1 million or less. So, I don't side necessarily with the players, but I certainly don't side with the billionaire owners in all of this, especially because it's pro sports is solvent. It's not like the newspaper industry, and it's not like some of these other businesses that are getting really hit hard. Pro sports have been the most solvent thing. They made $10 billion last year. $10 billion. I mean, I just refuse to believe that they can crack poverty now. And if they did, then their whole setup about how they handled their stuff is a sham.
Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times is our guest here for a few more moments. And by the way, the only thing that makes you less than normal, Ryan, is how cranky you are for such a young guy. That's really the only thing. So
it keeps me warm at night.
Hey, I want to get a quick thought from you on how the Mariners and a few other teams are handling minor league players by paying them. And I saw an article today about the Washington National Big League Club. The players are going to pay the minor leaguers. And you're seeing a lot of good come out of this. You're seeing some really cool gestures from David Price and Sin Chu Chu and different moments like that. But then on the other side, you see what the Oakland A's are about. And I keep hammering them because I think it's pathetic what they're doing. And Dave reminds me it is a business, and he's right. But you're talking about an owner in the A's that's worth $2 billion, and he doesn't want to pay his minor leaguers $400 a week while this is going on. Just your thoughts on the Mariners stepping up.
But that was a bad business move.
It was a bad business move.
I just wanted to clear that up.
but what do you – we see, you know, night and day approaches to this. Give me your thoughts on it.
I like that the Mariners decided to pay him through the season. I mean, because it's not a lot of money. I mean, for some of them, it's about what they normally make anyways, $400 a week. Others make more, but it's something. And I think, you know, the Nationals probably weren't going to pay very much, and then the big league players getting together and doing that shamed the Nationals into doing it, similar with the Dodgers. Like, and it shouldn't take major league players to shame the owners into paying for minor leaguers, you know, and that's the problem. I mean, the Mariners did cut 40-plus or close to 50 guys, but a bunch of those guys were going to be released, one, because, you know, they just weren't a part of the organization anymore, and two, because Major League Baseball is going to get rid of a minor league affiliate as well, so they didn't need that extra player. So, yeah, I mean, like, I can't understand why any team wouldn't, you know, and it sucks, too, because some of the people at the Mariners did get furloughed on the non-baseball side, a lot of the people that handle ticketing, sales, game sales, stuff like that. Got furloughed, and I got some friends that are taking pay reductions, and it's very frustrating in all of this, and that's why, again, like, the optics of this, you're cutting jobs of these people that don't work on the baseball side but are vital to your organization, and then all of a sudden you're going to, you know, bicker over money and play the low ball, high ball game and all these offers. It just seems really stupid to me.
Ryan, good stuff, my friend. We always appreciate it. And for those that didn't get a chance to read Ryan's article, I would highly advise checking that out. It was really, really well written. We appreciate it. Hopefully we're talking about getting close to an agreement here soon. So we'll talk to you next week and see where we are then.
Yeah, there better be agreement. I'm in Montana now. If there's no agreement, I'm never coming back. I decided.
Enjoy it, my friend.
All right. See you guys.
There you go. Ryan Divish, always an entertaining conversation with him. We're going to come back. We'll talk some football with the professor, John Clayton. He joins us next with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.